With everyone fighting for attention, how can your business stand out and connect with customers? Easy, with Constant Contact. Constant Contact's award-winning marketplace platform has helped millions of small businesses stand out, stay top of mind, and see big results fast. It's okay if you don't know much about marketing. Constant Contact's writing assistant tools and automation features help you craft messaging and say the right things at the right time. I use this to help write and send my email newsletters, and you should too. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Just go to ConstantContact.com right now. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com.
Hey guys, what's up? Kevin Jones, founder of Blue Wire. Thanks for listening to this podcast. Do me a favor, send it to one of your friends. We're growing this network, grassroots style. It takes everyone. You're a part of our team if you send this to one of your friends. All right, enjoy this podcast and appreciate your support.
All right, guys, welcome into another BuzzBee podcast. On today's episode, we're going to look into the Hornets' future as we head into the offseason and discuss the options this team has as it comes to roster building. The Hornets have missed out on the playoffs for a third straight season, and there are a lot of questions and decisions to be made before July 1st. I hope everyone is enjoying the NBA playoffs, the playoffs without the Hornets. I know I am. The two series that have, you know, kind of kept my interest are the Brooklyn-Philly matchup and the way that Embiid and Simmons have responded in Game 2, and also the series between the Thunder and the Blazers. Those two series I've been keeping my eye on more than most, and it seems like Lillard is pulling up from 30-plus feet consistently. So, Brian and Spencer, have you guys enjoyed the playoffs, and do you guys wish the Hornets were in there facing the Bucks?
Yeah, I've enjoyed them so far. I mean, I agree with you on the Portland-Oklahoma City series. That's kind of the one I had circled prior to the start. I still think it's going to probably be a seven-gamer. Still like Oklahoma City in that series when it's all said and done. But, you know, I'm still keeping my eye on the Boston-Indiana series. I know that it wasn't a super exciting first game, but Boston didn't blow you away to the point where you feel like they're going to run away with that one. And then, look, I mean, how can you not be intrigued with Orlando here, right? You know, we'll see what happens tonight. I guess when you guys are listening to this, you'll know that Toronto probably won and tied the series. But
yeah,
I mean, look, man, I'm happy for Steve Clifford. I just am.
It's awesome.
It's cool to see them doing this. And I don't know, man. Don't hold it against him. If DJ Augustine's going to play like, you know, Chris Paul in the offensive end, then maybe they have a shot.
Yeah, I think there might be some regression to the mean with both former Charlotte backup point guards, DJ Augustine and Michael Carter-Williams in Game 2 for Orlando. But you never know. Maybe they'll keep it going. Yeah, Richie, I wish the Hornets were in the playoffs. I mean, that was sort of the goal before the season, although a lottery pick is not a terrible consolation prize. But just when you look at what's left of the Pistons going against the Bucks, like, that series is a total joke. And with Blake being hurt,
yeah,
you know, I mean, I still think the Hornets would have been swept, or at best they win a game in Charlotte and this thing goes five. But the Hornets played them competitively in every game this season, including a win and a loss they had at the buzzer on opening night. And, you know, maybe Kemba goes buck wild for one game too. It's just that series would at least be, I think, if you were outside of the Milwaukee or Charlotte fan bases or media markets or whatever, I think that would at least draw a little bit of more attention, you know, Giannis versus Kemba. So, but, you know, this series is just a total joke now with the Pistons. But I've really been enjoying the playoffs. I got back last night on Monday night from going to see the Carolina Hurricanes play and get a win over the Washington Capitals, but I got back in time to catch Game 2 of Clippers and Warriors. And yes, I did stay up for that entire game. And yes, I could not believe what I was seeing as the Warriors blew a 31-point lead. That was amazing. I've still got my eye on Houston, Utah. I think the Jazz will rebound a little bit here, make that series more competitive. Just, you know, keeping an eye on how the Rockets and Warriors are positioning themselves ahead of a potential second-round matchup.
Yeah, I fell asleep in the second quarter of that Warriors game, and I thought, I mean, at that point, it wasn't a 31-point lead, but it felt like the Warriors were just going to be in control of that game. I did not realize when I woke up that actually happened the previous
night.
You and most other
people on the East Coast, I think, honestly.
Yeah. I can't remember the last time I was actually awake for a 10:30
time. I know, man.
So I can't do it. I just can't. But I couldn't believe it either.
It was one of those things where watching the Warriors, I'll stop watching when they sit Curry finally. Like, that's like the, okay, even though the game's not over, I can go to bed. But then, give it hats off to the Clippers, man. They kept pushing.
Sure.
All right, so I think the first thing that we need to address on this episode is the cap situation. Very timely episode as Biombo, unsurprisingly, picked up his $17 million player option for the 2019-2020 season. And guess what? He's currently the second highest paid player on this Charlotte Hornets roster. Spencer, since you love breaking down the salary cap and you're kind of more in tune to it than I am, I'm going to pass it to you to kind of break down the situation that the Hornets have as they head into the summer and just kind of look at some of the player options, free agents, non-guaranteed contracts, and kind of we'll discuss what could happen this summer.
Well, as most people know, if you listen to this pod or really stay in tune with the Hornets at all, they're not in a very good cap situation. that's probably being kind. But really right now, the skeleton of what it looks like, total salary without cap holds this summer – is just shy of $108 million. And then the total, if you're including the cap holds, which is really how you should look at this exercise, is about $151 million. So, just with the cap holds, the Hornets are already $19 million over the tax, into the tax. Of course, that's not where they're going to end up. But, that helps us kind of parlay into looking, okay, what can happen from here moving forward, going into the summer. Well, the first dominoes to fall, Richie mentioned the first one we saw today, Bismack Biyombo, not surprisingly, opting into the final year, $17 million of his deal. And you know what? Good for Biz. I can't believe that Orlando gave him that deal, but Biz literally, made a living for his children and his children's children in the NBA with his money, and good for him for doing it. The next two we're really looking at here is Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, $13 million player option for next season, and then Marvin Williams, $15 million and some change player option for next season. I mean, we'd probably start there. I think Marvin, there's really two ways to look at it for him. Do you cash in on what very well could be, I wouldn't guess it's going to be the last year of his career in the NBA, but any deal from here on out is going to be a minimum deal, a veteran minimum deal. I think that's pretty much locked in. So does Marvin say, I'm going to opt out of this, try to sit down with Charlotte and see if they'll give me, three for 15, right? So he can play at least three more seasons, make the same amount, or say, three for 18, something like that, yeah. Make a little bit more money and be able to extend his career. Those are the two ways to look at Marvin. And then MKG, with him, this is a really interesting player option. Ultimately, I think there's a really good chance he's going to opt into this. But for him, if he opted out, I think he's one of those players at this point to where there's probably four or five teams in the entire NBA where he can actually be, those teams have a system built to where they can get the most out of MKG. And I think we could all probably name who those teams are, most of the competitors in the Western Conference. But
yeah.
With MKG, I could see him literally getting a minimum deal next year if he opted out, but I could also see a team giving him like $10 million over 3 years. He's one of these guys that I just, at this point in his career in the NBA, I think he's just a little bit eye of the beholder, and I do think there are some beholders out there that see him, see a lot left on the table for MKG. He's, sneakily, I know we're a little biased here, but sneakily, probably one of the more interesting player option free agency situations really this summer in the whole NBA to me. So kind of like y'all, what are y'all's thoughts on those?
Yeah, I think MKG has been, the market for him, I've said this on this pod before, I'm fascinated to know what the market would be for him outside of Charlotte. Like I really am. My only thing would be, again, like you said, Spencer, kind of a high variance free agent. If he didn't go into his option for next season, and even then he'll be what, 26, 27, next summer. So it's not like he couldn't still, go out and try to get another contract after that. It's just, if the team's going to rebuild, would you want to be around for that, et cetera, et cetera. A guy that showed a little bit of ability to shoot the three this year and played the four and guarded fours and stuff like that. Can he get to more of that? That would really be a big boon. I think at this point that's probably unrealistic, but maybe he's got another, one more gear there too. Obviously, he does all the little stuff, all the dirty work, and he can kind of fill in the gap and be an impact player on both ends of the court, especially defensively. I guess my thing with him is Michael Kidd-Gilchrist is not going to ever make $13 million again in his season, right? Like that, like this is, I can't imagine there's ever going to be a deal in the, for the rest of his life where that guy can say, I'm making well over eight figures. Like I'm making eight figures plus some change here. So if that's the case and he's still young, like he could still cash in 12 months later too. Like I think there's a good chance that, you know, he's going to pick this option up. And you know, depending on how the Hornets, how their summer unfolds, I imagine, you know, he'll be back unless there's, you know, a trade or a, you know, a buyout or just depending on how things shake out or whatever. But nah, I think MKG has to, I think he's got to take this option just because he's not going to make, like, he'll never make $13 million again in a season, you know? And yes, he could, maybe he could get 30 over 10 or something like that. And that's a lot of money too, but I it's not going to ever happen. And he could still do that same gambit. He could still try to go get a 20 for two or a 30 over three in the summer of 2022 when there's, you know, I'd probably be less money, but less free agent competition too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess the only thing that I would say is that he made a mention of this, I believe, in his exit interviews, that it's not about the money. It's more about his happiness. And maybe I get the sense, because he did mention that, that maybe he's kind of grown unhappy a little bit since the, you know, the start of the season. He had a very, very strong start to this season. He was playing a lot. I even made a mention of it on the earlier pods, how impactful he was, maybe the second most impactful player on this Hornets team, probably in the first month or two. But as the season went on, his minutes went down. In March and April, he was only averaging 13 minutes per game, which was 6 minutes less than the other months in the season. So a whole lot more DNPs, a whole lot more inactives for him in those final 20 games or so. So I wonder if he views himself as someone that is part of this team or has a role within James Borrego's offense. So if he is trying to opt into this $13 million this season and then, you know, just test the market next season, if he doesn't play a whole lot next season or if he feels like he's not going to showcase his quote-unquote skills, then maybe his, demand will go let down a little bit more next season. So I do think there's a slight chance that he opts out of this. But I would agree, Brian, like he's probably not going to see $13 million a year per ever in his career again. And then back to Marvin Williams, Spencer, you made a mention of this. I do think there could be a possibility of him opting out, knowing that if we offered him a 2-year or a 3-year deal, but I do think it would have to be more than the $15 million. If he was going to go 3 years, it would probably have to be closer to like 18 or 20, like you said.
Yeah. Didn't Bunnell report too that Marvin said he's going to be back?
He did.
Yeah.
So one way or another, expect him back. One other quick thing on MKG, because, you know, I mentioned that I think maybe there's four or five, whatever, however many teams, the Houstons, the Golden States, the Denvers, you know, teams like Portland, maybe teams like this, these systems I think would fit MKG. You know, keep this in mind.
He'd be awesome in Denver, man. Holy
yeah,
crap.
Yeah, he would. They need a playmaker, not being a 7-footer more than anything else there. But they also need some wing defense. Everyone in the West does. But here's the point I want to make. The reason I really think MKG ultimately, it's probably like 75-25 he does opt in, is because the main building tool for a lot of these teams that are competitive in the West is a mid-level exception. Most of these teams don't have access to the non-taxpayer mid-level exception, which is what, you know, financially,
right,
what would make it feasible for MKG to opt out and then opt in to a 2 or 3. You know, so I don't know if the math works for him ultimately unless he wanted to go play, you know, in, I don't know, Orlando, you know, some middle feeder. But I don't know why he would, you know, pass up $13 million to go take, you know, an extra year or two and $5 million more to do that. So just something to keep in mind with MKG.
That's a great point.
Let's talk about the free agents here. You know, obviously Kemba, I don't really know. There's a whole lot. And there's a Twitter question. We're going to kind of touch on him a little bit more. But everyone knows he's a free agent.
Wait, hold up. Kemba's a free agent?
Sorry.
I didn't know this.
We hadn't told Brian yet. We were trying to keep him up.
Damn. That's me.
Yeah, I'm sorry. So sorry. Yeah. So Kemba Walker's a free agent. So if you thought you were already sad as a Hornets fan follower, whatever you call yourself, you're gonna be sad.
Is he gonna come back to Charlotte? I don't know. Let's talk about it, man.
Let's talk about that here in a minute. So let's talk about Frank and Lamb here for a minute, because I think that the way the season ended, certainly for Frank Kaminsky, it becomes interesting. Frank Kaminsky is almost an $11 million cap hold, which is pretty high, but it's because he was the ninth pick in the draft. So that's a pretty big number. I'm not really sure where I stand on Frank. I do actually think there's a chance that Charlotte does extend him a qualifying offer, which is just shy of $5 million.
Right.
Because they have to do that to restrict his rights. Mm-hmm. So if they offer him the qualifying offer at that point, he becomes a restricted free agent. So now you control his rights. But I could also see it going the other way. I could see Charlotte saying, look, you had a good end to the last season, but who's really going to give you a big payday out there that we can't meet? But, you know, after saying those two things, if you're Charlotte, why not? I mean, qualifying offer $5 million, there's a chance that Kemba Walker walks. Like, at that point, you know, financially, you're not too worried about that. And here's the other thing. Charlotte can wait on Kemba's situation to decide whether or not they want to extend a qualifying offer to Frank, let the Kemba situation iron itself out a little bit. So, it'll be interesting to see what happens in that. And I can see that one going either way, too. Jeremy Lamb, I don't really see the Hornets being able to bring Lamb back. He's got a cap hold of $11.2 million. Yeah, they have his full bird rights, obviously, so they can offer him whatever they want. But if there's any inclination that Kemba is going to come back, Jeremy Lamb is most certainly gone. If Kemba decides to walk, there's a universe into where Charlotte could make it work, but it still would be really, really tough and tight, especially if they expect to use their mid-level exception too. So I would say that, as weird as it sounds, I think there's a better chance Frank Kaminsky's back in Charlotte next year.
Yeah, I agree too. Plus, if Kemba walks, like, if you re-sign Lamb, can you even turn him into an asset? I mean, I guess maybe he becomes a little bit of a trade chip, like a guy that can come off the bench and score, like he can run a pick and roll and stuff like that. But it's like, you wouldn't be bringing that guy back to like compete and stuff like that. It just would, the thought process, I guess, would have to be, well, can you turn this guy into something else beyond, just like a decent bench scorer or whatever. And I guess we should also mention, with Biombo picking up the $17 million option next season, I guess there does exist a universe where they could use the stretch provision on Biz if they wanted to sort of clear out a little bit more wiggle room just in the summer of 2019. They could spread out $17 million hit over three seasons. I can't remember what exactly the trigger date is that they would have to unleash that on, but I suppose that's a possibility. I do think, Spencer, I agree. Like, if you bring Kemba back, I think Kaminsky's the one that does make a little bit more sense too, right? With not just in terms of finances and stuff like that too, but also, like, you have some guys, some young, cheap players on the wing, Miles Bridges, Dwayne Bacon, Malik Monk. Like, those guys are ready to maybe pick up some of the, at least the hope would be Malik. I don't know if you're going to get it from him next season. The hope would be Malik's ready to absorb some of Lamb's production. But Kaminsky's the only stretch five you currently got on the roster too, right? And this spark that the Hornets had down late in the season, a lot of it, or a good chunk of it, was with Frank and Kemba on the court together. And we talked about this on episode 98, just like the looks that Frank Kaminsky gave them along with Miles Bridges, where they would run the double high screens and the horn sets and the drag screens, and having one guy that can roll and cut and having one guy that can pop and flare. 384 minutes this season with Kemba and Kaminsky on the court. Charlotte, 109 points per 100 possessions, plus 5 net rating. Last 10 games of the season with those two on the court, 1.15 points per possession, plus 5.2 net rating. Kaminsky, 1.02 points per possession, and 56% effective shooting out of the pick and pops this season, according to Synergy, which is pretty good. Also this year, 39% three-point shooting from above the break, 66% field goal percentage in the restricted area too. So, like, you know, if you're bringing Kemba back, like, he's a guy that makes a little bit of sense, especially since, like, I don't know how much you can trust Cody Zeller. You really can't go into a season expecting to get anything out of out of Bismack Biyombo beyond just, you know, a guy that can eat some minutes. And Lord knows where we are with Willy Hernangómez, assuming he's back next season too.
Yeah, and real quickly, Richard, I said that wrong regarding Kaminsky. The Hornets would have to extend the qualifying offer prior to that July 1 moratorium. So
yeah.
So that would have to happen before the – I said that wrong just a minute ago. Sorry.
No, I think you do extend that offer, that $4.5 million to Frank Kaminsky. And I can't believe I'm saying this, but I'd rather have him on the roster than Hernangómez. And we can get into this in a second, but his contract, non-guarantee, comes up at the end of June. So that could be a signal as to whether or not we're going to pursue Kaminsky. I know you have to extend that qualifying offer prior, and he becomes a restricted free agent. And we could also just, you know, have him field offers as a restricted free agent and not match. But do you guys think there's a world where we just let Hernangómez go, don't guarantee his contract, and then just put all our eggs in the Frank Kaminsky basket?
Yeah, I think Cody Zeller – this is going deeper into this conversation here, but I think Cody Zeller's for sale this summer. I think the team will try to move him and then possibly pivot towards a front court of whoever we draft in the first round, if we do, who I think it is going to be a center, Willy Hernangómez and Frank Kaminsky. I think that's totally possible. I strongly believe the Hornets are going to try to move off Zeller's deal this summer. So when you consider that, because, number one, they need to get off salary. Number two, Frank Kaminsky at $5 million and Willy Hernangómez at $1.5 million, that's pretty cost effective.
Yeah, let's right. Quick note on Zeller, too. The last three seasons going back to 2016-2017, just 144 games played for Cody Zeller. 62 games in 16-17, 33 games in 17-18, and 49 games this season in 18-19. So, yeah, at this point with Zeller, it's like great player, really good player on both ends of the court, but just – limited in some ways, and obviously health is just a huge issue with him.
Yeah, I mean, when he's on the court, clearly he makes the Hornets a better team, and all the numbers back up that thought, but he can't stay on the court. And I wonder how much his trade value has dropped, but that's always kind of in the back of my mind as putting Zeller out there as a trade piece. But, you know, knowing the Hornets' luck, we would trade him, and he would stay healthy for a full season.
He's a great player, too. He really is. I mean, I'm preaching to the choir with you guys, but Cody Zeller, when healthy, is good. It's just, man, his health is it's a big problem.
It's a problem. The other non-guarantees, we can run through them real quick. I mean, well, Hernangómez, trigger date, July 28th. So we'll know, you know, obviously before the season here. Dwayne Bacon, I mean, you can lock that one in.
Yep.
He is trigger date.
August 1st.
Yeah, August 1st. Yep, that's right. August 1st. And then Tony Parker, he's the July 4th trigger date. And, you know, he's sending out mixed messages. This season obviously didn't go how he had planned. And I think maybe how he and the team had discussed it would go. So that one's going to be interesting, too. I personally wouldn't be too upset with Parker, you know, deciding, hey, let's just part ways. Or even if he decides to retire, you know, I think that would probably be a healthy move for both sides.
I think so too.
To be honest, I think he's so gone. Too. I mean, this is after the draft, after free agency has started. I think maybe the draft could signal his fate. I mean, if we do draft another point guard, I know that Devonta Graham has played pretty decent as a second round pick, and we have control over him for the next couple of seasons at a decent price. But I do think Parker's gone as a Hornet.
I think so, too. And look, they got good return on the $5 million that they paid him for this season. I mean, like you said, Spencer, I agree. I don't think it just went quite how he probably envisioned, but he had a good season for them offensively and won him some games and was a lift when Kemba needed it. And I don't think Devonta Graham is maybe quite ready to be that on over the course of an 82-game season. This is under the hypothetical that Kemba comes back and they're still competing and stuff, contending or trying to make a playoff spot or whatever. But with Parker, you know, 5.25 next season, million that is, like, yeah, I think it's probably best time to just move on, honestly.
Yeah, and here's something we should keep in mind as well, and this might come up in the Twitter questions we're going to go through here in a minute, Richie, but, you know, the trade exception Charlotte still has, $7.8 million. It expires on July the 6th. This is an interesting trade exception because Mitch Kupchak has – has said in the past that he intends to try to use that. Charlotte can weirdly provide someone with salary relief before the fiscal year turns over and then kind of figure out the rest for themselves later, especially if they have an inclination that Kemba Walker is going to not come back. At that point, Charlotte, you know, they could take some player, you know, name your player that makes a salary of 7.8 or less, and then potentially have an asset attached to it by giving somebody relief, you know, before the fiscal year turns over again. So just keep that tool in mind. That's not a small trade exception, and I do think Charlotte will try to utilize, even if they don't know what Kim is going to do, take somebody in that can play a rotation role for you, and then figure out how you're going to stay under the tax later. If not, it goes away, and that's fine if it just goes away. But as handicapped as this team is to build out a roster this summer, I think they're probably best suited to go ahead and use that while it's there and then figure it out later.
Yeah, why not? Like, again, use all the mechanisms that are in your tool chest here, right? Like, you don't have a lot, so like you said, this is a sizable exception. So yeah, if you can be clever enough to find a way to use it, yeah, you absolutely should. Of course, this exception left over from the Dwight Howard Bismack Biyombo trade from last summer.
At Blue Wire, we don't just partner with any advertiser. We want to make sure we're giving our listeners a good deal on a quality product.
That's exactly why we love doing business with Harry's. Harry's is giving Blue Wire listeners a shaving kit for just $3.
Go to harrys.com/bluewire and you'll save $10 on a trial set, which includes a 5-blade razor, rich lathering shave gel, and a travel blade cover.
If you're not familiar with Harry's, it's time you should be. Harry's has fixed shaving by combining a simple, clean design with quality and durable blades at a fair price. The founders were tired of paying for razors that were overpriced and over-designed. Harry's bought a world-class blade factory in Germany that's been making quality blades for over 95 years.
Join the 10 million who have tried Harry's, like myself, and claim your trial offer by going to harrys.com/bluewire. All of Harry's blades come with a 100% quality guarantee. If you don't love your shave, let them know and they'll give you a full refund.
Again, make sure you go to harrys.com/bluewire to redeem your razor for $3.
All right, let's hop into some Twitter questions. We put this out on Twitter probably about several weeks ago, and we got a good response from all of you guys. And a lot of these questions overlap, so I'm probably going to kind of combine a couple together. So this first one comes from two different people. I kind of combine this at BuzzCity12 and at PatrickConner7. Both of these questions dealt with Frank Kaminsky, or at least in some way. First question says this: who do you think is more likely to be gone next season, Monk, Batum, or Kaminsky? And then PatrickConner7 follows it up: should the Hornets bring back Frank Kaminsky? So I'll just kind of give my quick thoughts on this. I think logistically speaking, out of Monk, Batum, and Kaminsky, I would say that Kaminsky is the most likely to be gone next season, as he is the only one that's not under contract. But I think if they did want to make it work to where they would want to bring him back, it could happen. But, I mean, to answer the question, he is definitely the most likely to be gone of those three. I think it's going to be very difficult to trade Batum and get off of his contract. And then Monk at $4 million a year under contract, I can see him just, you know, sticking it out with the Hornets one more year and see how he progresses, even though he had another disappointing season. And then to answer the follow-up question by PatrickConner7, should the Hornets bring back Kaminsky? As much as it pains me to say this, or as weird it is to say this, I would say yes. I would try to get Kaminsky back, but if there's an offer out there as a restricted free agent that's too much, clearly you're not going to match it.
Yeah, I would rank these as, agree with Richie on Kaminsky. You know, I think Monk has probably come second as guy most likely not to be back. I just think there's still some value in him. You know, again, eye of the beholder. I think there's some teams that would give you something for him. Batum, you know, Zach Lowe mentioned in his column the week before last that, you know, that he thinks it's a possibility that the most likely guy, even above Kemba, to not be on this roster next year is Nick Batum, which surprised me. Good luck finding a deal. With the way the Hornets do business, what history tells us, I can see why he believes that's the case, and probably his sources are telling him that that is the case. But what the Hornets are going to have to attach to that to get off is not going to be worth it in the end to me. Right. I understand that how the Hornets are going to do business. If it was me doing business, I would ride this thing out with Batum. But yeah, that's how I would rank them, I think.
Do want to clarify too. I said with regards to the trade exception, that was the Dwight Howard, Timofey Mozgov trade, not Dwight Howard of Bismack Biyombo. So wanted to just sneak that in there real quickly. Yeah, I think more likely to be gone. I think Kaminsky. I mean, you'd like to think there's some sort of mechanism to move Batum from the roster, but it's just sort of tough to see the really obvious way for them doing that without sort of mortgaging some of these draft picks, which, depending on what happens with Kemba, you might need. Monk's so tough to figure because I guess he sort of factors in as a hypothetical trade chip. But I think he'll be back, and I think Batum is sort of unmovable. So I think Kaminsky becomes the one that's most flexible. I still kind of can't believe Lowe had that mention in his piece about Batum the other week. Seems crazy. It seems a little crazy to me because I'd like to just know more of the mechanics behind some of these hypothetical decisions that could move Nick Batum. You can't stretch him. It's way too much money. And what kind of trade would you have to conjure up, and who would you have to do it with just to even get that asset off your books? It's tough. So yeah, I would say Kaminsky, because they currently have at least two centers already under contract, under roster, and Bismack and Cody Zeller, and you could have Willie Aaron and Gomez. So I just think in terms of position and in terms of finances that Kaminsky is the most likely to be gone.
Yeah, I just don't know a trade for Batum, how much it would be worth it, like Spencer said. And this kind of leads us into the next question, at JohnBerry348. What is Nick Batum's future in Charlotte? We had given him a lot of money, and honestly, we are disappointed. Should or could we trade him in a package to get someone like Bradley Beal? First off, his role in Charlotte, at least this past season, it seems like he's become more of a point-of-attack defender who still, I think, is overrated on that end by many Hornets fans. And then on offense, he wants nothing to do with the ball. they actually play better with him off the court than on the court. And he just shies away from the basket, shies away from the ball. And I wish that for a player that's getting paid that much money, he was a little bit more involved. Because there were games last season in which it seems like out of nowhere he stepped up. But then again, his usage percentage went down the drain as the season went on.
to say the least.
Yeah. Could we trade him in a package to get someone like Bradley Beal? There's no way. I mean, that guy's arguably a third-team All-NBA player. The only way that you could trade Batum was attaching a lot of things that would not be beneficial for the Hornets. So, unfortunately, I don't think Batum is going to be off this roster next season. As much as Zach Lowe says that, I just don't see a world in which the Hornets would benefit from that trade. It's going to be very difficult. So if they can get creative and find a way, that'd be awesome. But I think his future is in Charlotte, but it's not much of a role on either end of the court.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, this proposed trade for a guy like Bradley Beal, I mean, like Richie said, no, absolutely no way. I mean, you're looking at dumping him. The only reason Charlotte would make this trade, right, is if they can dump him into cap space and not have to take, significant salary back. I just did crunch the quick numbers. That only gets him to, after you count, tackle on the salary for the player we're going to draft in the first round, probably like $86 million, and that's in nine players. Well, that's only about $20 million under the projected salary cap, and you still got to come up with five more roster spots, So it doesn't even behoove the Hornets to do it at that point, because now they have to act as a team in free agency if they were able to trade him in the cap space as a team operating under the salary cap, so they don't have access to exceptions like the non-taxpayer mid-level exception. So it just doesn't move the needle at all, and that's why, to me, in the end, you should just ride this thing out, just let it come off clean. And look, these are the things that we've talked about before. Kimba's not a dummy. He knows this too, right? Like, there's just no way, even if you take Nick Batum's big salary out off the books, there's no way to improve this roster. It's kind of hard to wrap your mind around, but it's very important for fans to understand. There's no way for Charlotte to create cap space, significant cap space that will make a difference this summer.
As far as Nick, agreed, Spencer, that was very well laid out. As far as like Nick Batum's role, like I have no clue. Like if this guy's back, I don't know. I don't know what you do. Like it's wild to have your most expensive player on your roster be, if Kemba was back, he'd be the second most expensive player on the roster. But like to have a veteran like this that just. You're not like I appreciate Borrego trying to make him like a spot up shooter and defender this year, but it just didn't work, man. Like I hate to say it. I don't think it was on Borrego, but like it just didn't work with Nick. Batum in the month of April, 86 minutes, had a 3.7% usage rate. He attempted 0 free throws. He attempted 6 field goals, 2 of 6 shooting, and only one of those was a 2-point shot. Like the guy was so checked out at the end of the season. Since the start of January, in 812 minutes, Nick Batum attempted 22 free throws. Batum was one of 2 players in the NBA this season to play over 2,300 minutes and finish with fewer than 100 free throw attempts. PJ Tucker was the other, but like that guy's an all-NBA defender, and all he does is shoot corner threes. Nick Batum's touches per game this season, 44. That's down from 66 his first season in Charlotte. And during the month of April, just 24 touches per game. Like, the guy was – it's just – like, I don't know where you go from here because he's so expensive, and he is skilled, and he is a veteran. I don't know what you do. Like, it's a tough thing to sort of place because I'm not sure there's a way to sort of revitalize the relationship with him. He and JB, I mean, maybe there is, but this was sort of the year it felt like he had to get stuff back on track, and it didn't happen. Even when they sort of changed his role up, he just faded further and further away from actually helping them win basketball games. And the juxtaposition with that and the energy and the effort that Miles Bridges and Dwayne Bacon were bringing, it's tough to find a role for this guy on this roster, honestly.
Yeah, well, and the crazy thing is, it's not like his minutes were ever completely – it's not like Borrego just pulled the plug on all his minutes and benched the guy. I mean, he gave him an – albeit a small one, still an opportunity even up until the very end of the year. So if you just continue to fail to take advantage of opportunities over and over and over and over again, whose fault is that? You know, I mean, you're still getting minutes. And so I have no, you know, Nick Batum can be frustrated as much as he wants. I have no sympathy for him. This is the National Basketball Association. This is the greatest league in the world. There is no place for a passive player getting paid $25 million a year in this league. You cannot have a sub-5 usage rate for any stretch of games. I'm sorry. So, I mean, you know, enjoy this money because unless you have an epiphany, unlike I've seen, I think, since I've been watching basketball in the NBA, this would be the last contract, that's for sure.
Yeah,
I mean, I understand being a player that doesn't want the ball in his hands and being the focal point of the offense, but like Brian brought up, like his touches this season have gone down. And in the preseason, it felt like he was initiating the offense a whole lot more, grabbing the defensive rebound, pushing the pace. I thought that's why I made that prediction preseason, which, you know, failed tremendously, where I thought he'd average the most assists in his career. Did not happen. Didn't touch the ball enough for that to happen. So, yeah, I'm not sure how this happens because it's not just a switch thing, like where you can just switch it on. Well, I guess it seems that way sometimes where there's a stretch of games where he just switches on his aggressiveness, which is I don't know why he can't do that all the time. So any last thoughts on Nick Batum before we get to this next question?
Nah. Yeah, I just feel like his role's changed so much beyond initially what Cho and Clifford and maybe Buchanan and MJ sold him in 2015 and then 2016 that I don't know if there can be some reclamation project with Nick Batum, and that's the hard part. That's what makes the next 2 years tough, basically. It's not just the money.
Right.
It's that he's sunk cost in a lot of different ways.
All right, the last question overlaps between 3 people that reached out to us on Twitter, @AI_smooth, @ThatManFran, and @KIEFW15. All 3 of them ask very similar questions. What do the Hornets do if Kemba stays, and what do the Hornets do if Kemba walks? So I'll pose that question to you guys. As weird as it sounds, I'm not sure the answer is all that different depending on if he walks or stays, just because of our limited flexibility. But I do think that if he leaves, I think that we, obviously the direction of the franchise changes a little bit, but I think our roster itself will mostly stay unchanged depending on what he does, right? I mean, I feel like there's not going to be some drastic overhaul with Kemba leaving.
Well, you know, this is an interesting question because a lot of the what happens if, it's not even going to have a chance to happen. It's actually going to happen before, because, you know, if the Hornets want to get very, very aggressive in trying to keep Kemba, because the draft is their final opportunity. You know, a trade around the draft involving a larger salary and you know, obviously the 12th pick, if that ends up being what it is, that's their last chance to prove anything to Kemba. So I would say this. I would say if, Richie, you're correct, you know, if Kemba resigns, I wouldn't expect much change at all, just because I'm not sure there's really anything you can do other than use your exception and just try to stay under the tax, basically exactly what we did last summer. If Kemba leaves, well, let's put it this way. If the Hornets make a trade involving their first-round pick or even their second-round pick and a larger salary, then that's a sign they feel like they have a good chance to keep Kemba Walker, to me. If mm-hmm. if they pick 12th and you don't hear any chatter about a trade leading up to the draft, I would say that it doesn't suggest Kemba's gone, but I would say any lack of urgency or aggressiveness involving the Hornets in a trade around the draft is probably not a great sign if you want to see Kemba Walker back in Charlotte. So that's kind of how I would address that question.
Yeah, and look, if Kemba leaves, you burn it all to the ground. Like you assess whatever, you know, plus young assets you have. Miles Bridges at the top of the list, Dwayne Bacon, Devontae Graham, Malik Monk, you know, those are the guys. And then unfortunately they don't have a lot of, you know, I don't think they have a lot of like tradable assets, but beyond that, but yeah, you tank and everyone in Charlotte watches a bunch of James Wiseman playing at Memphis next season. And, you know, you try to, or Cole Anthony at UNC, or if assuming he ends up there, and yeah, you just batten down the hatches for some gruesome times and tank the hell out of it, because there's no other ground between trying desperately to construct an average roster around Kemba if he comes back on a max contract, or if he leaves, you know, the only thing you can do is just burn it down and assess what you got. And yeah, and that's tough, because that's maybe not the job that James Borrego signed up for. You know what I mean? When he took the job and stuff too. And man, I don't know if Mitch Kupchak is really the executive that is you put in place to run a full rebuild that didn't really go so well with him in Los Angeles before that sort of short-circuited, and you know, the plug got pulled for him on that. But like, I think I still don't see there's no other approach between those two things. Those are the two ways the Hornets are going to enter the 2019-2020 NBA season.
Well, the crazy thing is the Hornets won't even have to tank if Kemba walks.
And yeah, true. It's true.
You know, like
it's a good point.
They have zero cap space still if he doesn't come back. Nick Batum will be, you know, obviously their highest paid player. There's nothing there, so they'll be bad, you know, either way you look at them.
God, they will be so bad. Oh my God. Ooh, buddy.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking, you know, 15 wins bad.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
All right, so the last way that the Hornets can obviously address and acquire players is through the draft, and we're not going to get into individual prospects so much as just kind of looking at the draft big picture. The draft is some ways away in June 20th, but the Hornets do have 3 picks this year. They did win the coin toss between, I believe, the Heat and the Kings, which give them the best chance of acquiring that 12th pick, and I believe they have a 1% chance of getting the top pick, so there's that. But they also have 2 second-round picks, neither of which are their own. They're getting it through a trade. So they get the 36th pick via Washington, which dates back four or five seasons, and then the 52nd pick via OKC with the Diallo trade that we made last season. So, guys, what are your thoughts on having three picks this season? I mean, I don't know if there's much we can talk about in terms of, like, just draft prospects, where we can find a 36th player, best player at that point, but just any thoughts on having three picks this year compared to maybe just a regular two?
Not a lot. I mean, you know, we've seen in the past, you know, Charlotte, they like to trade second round picks and move up to get a player that they have circled. So, you know, I think that's in play. I mean, but I don't think there's a lot here, to be honest. I with that 36th pick, you know, I circle a guy like Ty Jerome, and I wonder, man, if
he's the first name that came to my head, too.
What if Kimba walks this year and we can start Devontae Graham? We already know we're going to be bad. Wait, give Ty Jerome his backup. So I get a little bit excited thinking about that. But no, not a lot of analysis here. It's obviously always nice to have more picks than not, especially when there's an opportunity that you could really, really be bad, get some youth into the pipeline. So, I mean, totally. I think that's the takeaway.
And, you know, having another top 40 pick's not a bad thing, right? Like you said, Ty Jerome. I think there are some people that grade him out as a first round pick. I sort of have him in that 25 to 30 range. There's plenty of people that think of him as 45 to 60. So yeah, I could totally see you getting him at 36. You could, you know, get him on one of those Devontae Graham, Dwayne Bacon type deals. And yeah, I think that would be a nice little pickup. You know, some other names to kick around. You could think Shamori Ponds, the point guard from St. John's. I think, Iggy Brzdikas from Michigan is a guy that you could see had a really nice freshman season, but I could see him falling into that range. There's just a lot of variance once you get to that like 25-40 range too. So some good players, assuming they keep the pick. There's some guys they could go get, and we'll have plenty of time to talk about that over the next 2 months here.
Yeah, and I think I would draft Ponds just on his name, like I would Shake Milton. So that's a pretty cool name, Shamori Ponds.
As long. It is a great name. As long as, you know, Kai Bowman from Boston College, another name to backup point guard name to throw around. But yeah, as long as Shamori Ponds doesn't have to go against Trey Jones in the NBA, I think he could be maybe a serviceable backup. Yeah.
All right, guys. Thanks again for tuning in to another episode of BuzzBeat. You guys can listen to these episodes on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, anywhere you prefer to listen to your podcast. And you can definitely find more content on our podcast and others at BlueWirePods.com. Hope you guys have a good one, and we will see you guys next time.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.